ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Going to read text 16 from chapter 14.
Karmanas Sukritas Yahu Satvikam Nirmalam Palam Rajasas Tupalam Dukkam Agyanam Tamasak Palam Karmanak Sukritas Yahu Satvikam Nirmalam Palam Rajasas Tupalam Dukam Agyanam Tamasak Palam Karmanaha of work Sukritasya pious. Ahuhu is said. Satvikam in the mode of goodness. Nirmalam purified. Palam the result. Rajasaha of the mode of passion. To but. Palam the result. Dukkham, misery. Agyanam, nonsense. Tamasaha, of the mode of ignorance. Palam, the result. Text translation. The result of pious action is pure and is said to be in the mode of goodness. But action done in the mode of passion results in misery. And action performed in the mode of ignorance results in foolishness. Or agyanam, or nonsense. You nonsense. Prabhupada would, anyway. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The result of pious activities in the mode of goodness is pure. Therefore, the sages who are free from all illusion are situated in happiness, but activity in the mode of passion are simply miserable. Any activity for material happiness is bound to be defeated. If, for example, one wants to have a skyscraper. Have you ever wanted to have a skyscraper? Well, in case you have. So much human misery has to be undergone before a big skyscraper can be built. The financier has to take much trouble to earn a massive wealth. And those who are slaving to construct the building have to render physical toil. The miseries are there. Thus, Bhagavad Gita says that in any activity performed under the spell of the mode of passion, there is definitely great misery. There may be a little so-called mental happiness. I have this house or this money. But that is not actual happiness. Paragraph. As far as the mode of ignorance is concerned, the performer is without knowledge and therefore all his activities result in present misery and afterwards he will go on toward animal life. Animal life is always miserable, although under the spell of the illusory energy, Maya, the animals do not understand this. Slaughtering poor animals is also due to the mode of ignorance. The animal killers do not know that in the future the animal will have a body suitable to kill them. That is the law of nature. In human society, if one kills a man, he has to be hanged. That is the law of the state. Listen to this. Because of ignorance, people do not perceive that there is a complete state controlled by the Supreme Lord. Every living creature is a son of the Supreme Lord, and he does not tolerate even an ant being killed. One has to pay for it. So, indulgence in animal killing for the taste of the tongue is the grossest type of ignorance. A human being has no need to kill animals because God has supplied so many nice things. If one indulges in meat eating anyway, it is to be understood that he is acting in ignorance and is making his future very dark. Of all kinds of animal killing, the killing of cows is most vicious because the cow gives us all kinds of pleasure by supplying milk. In the Vedic literature, Rig Veda 9.46.4, the words Gobihi Prinita Matsaram indicate that one who, being fully satisfied by milk, is desirous of killing the cow, is in the grossest ignorance. There is also a prayer in Vedic literature that states, Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha Jagat Hitaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Namaha. My Lord, you are the well-wisher of the cows and the Brahmanas, and you are the well-wisher of the entire human society and world. Quoting from Vishnu Purana. The purport is, the special mention is given in that prayer for the protection of the cows and the Brahmanas. Brahmanas are the symbol of spiritual education, and cows are the symbol of the most valuable food. These two living and living creatures, the Brahmanas and the cows, must be given all protection. That is real advancement of civilization. In modern human society, spiritual knowledge is neglected and cow killing is encouraged. It is to be understood then that human society is advancing in the wrong direction and is clearing the path to its own condemnation. A civilization which guides the citizens to become animals in their next lives is certainly not a human civilization. The present human civilization is, of course, grossly misled by the modes of passion and ignorance. It is a very dangerous age, and all nations should take care to provide the easiest process, Krishna consciousness, to save humanity from the greatest danger. Could you write a purport like that to this verse? I don't think all of us together could have the collective intelligence to write a nice purport like this. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Notice that Prabhupada in the purport spends little time with goodness, a little more time with passion, and a lot of time with ignorance. Because that's the predominance, proportionately, of the modes of nature. Where are the sages in modern society? They're the Mayaya Pratigyana type, commonly. Asurim bhavam ashritam, commonly. Would-be brahmanas, they have capacity for intelligence but misguided by those who misguided them. And this is going on. So it continues, it perpetuates itself. The modes of nature darken the next generation, and the next generation becomes darker and darker. Here's a visual image. Here's a big bucket of paint, white paint. And here's a little bit of blue. I got a little eyedropper and put a little bit of, little couple of drops of red and a couple of drops of blue and stir the bucket of paint. What happens? It's off-white now. But it doesn't stop there, because the red and the blue, those, in terms of karma, that action has its concomitant reaction, means more red and more blue, and stir, and more red and more blue, and it just gets discolored. And how much white do you need in order to get it white again? You have to have a pigment extractor. You have to remove the... Even if you try to be good in the age of Kali that's so strongly influenced by passion and ignorance, what's taken to be good is passion and ignorance. Ignorance of the bodily conception of life. And passion, pursuing happiness of the body. Just do it nicely. Treat others nicely. In ignorance. So it's minus transcendental knowledge. The system is self-perpetuating. Here's another visual image, a whirlpool. Something is moving around the outside of the whirlpool. You just put a little cork or something that floats on the outside, and it moves around and around and around and around and around and around. It goes faster and faster, and then just... it's gone. Next. The modes of nature work like that. And therefore, it's a mystery in one sense, how you go from Satyug, Tretyug, Dwapayug, Kaliyug, and then back to Satyug. And the answer is, Kalki Avatar has to come. He just annihilates everybody and everything. And there are some living entities, Vyasadev and other Chiranjiva souls, that are situated in a higher realm of existence, and they descend into this realm of existence, and they begin Satyayuga, and that's how it starts. How you go from the bottom of the vortex back up. It's how Satyayuga starts, from that cycle, because it has to be. Time, in the Vedic perspective, is cyclical, or moves in cycles, like the wheel of time. Sudarshan is a wheel. And it moves, and it destroys everything, and it moves really fast. It can move slow, can move fast. Slow up here, fast down here. So the degradation due to the influence of ignorance is very rapid. But please bear in mind, Kali Yuga just got started. 5,000 something years ago, we'll say 5,200 years ago. And what it looks like at the bottom of the vortex, we know from the 12th canto of Bhagavatam. Then even now, it's where there's a golden age within the iron age. And there's the dispensation for those who take shelter of the means of elevation or perfection, made readily accessible within this age of Kali. So that's the last sentence of the purport. People of all nations should make readily available the best means to get relief from this influence of the lower modes of nature, the process of Krishna consciousness, the best. Is it, 'cause the process of Krishna consciousness, it's not a self... He's not... Right way to say this. He's referring to a principle, not just an organization. He's referring to a principle of Krishna consciousness. what's that principle? 1866, that principle. Devoting oneself, surrendering oneself fully to the interest of the Supreme. That's come to the end of this chapter, where Arjuna asks Krishna, what are the symptoms of one who is beyond the modes of nature? And what are the means for achieving that condition beyond the modes of nature? As indicated, even if you, we as devotees, we're encouraged to cultivate a lifestyle that's in the quality of goodness. Our life should be framed in the quality of goodness with something at the center, sadhana. Those activities which directly awaken our dormant Krishna consciousness, that's right at the center. Create an atmosphere of goodness through all the symptoms of goodness. Symptoms of goodness that lead to illumination. So, regulation, cleanliness. I mean, it's a summit, Prabhupada's phrase, summit cleanliness. Not fanatical regulation, but strong regulation. I'm thinking of sharing something with you. I'm debating. I'll share it with you. When I was in, many of you know Brajahari in Juhu. Yes? Many of you know him. Those of you that don't know him, may you be very fortunate one day come to know him. He's a temple president of the Juhu Temple, and he's been there for some number of years. Vice president before and then president, so the span of that is probably like 30 years, 25 years, something like that. And he's a perfect gentleman. On top of an entity that has enormous complexity, enormous wealth, enormous, you know, most in a very passionate city. I forget, Gopal Krishna said how many people come to visit there on an average Sunday. I asked, I was going to follow up and ask for sure, Brajahari. Something like 10,000 people every Sunday. You get 2,000? Around 2,000? 1,000. So if I understood correctly, an average Sunday is 10,000. I mean, whatever the number is, it's like there's people all over the place. It's, you know, it's Bombay. And a very popular place. So, but the person on top is a perfect gentleman. He's very decisive, always very kind, always very giving. He's an amazing person. So he's had some health problems. And he's been going here and going there, and, you know, his knees something, and his digestion something, and something. So whenever I'm in Bombay, we have our meetings there, I just go and pay my obeisances every time I go by his room, just because I like his association. I like offering my respects to such a person as him. So he shared something with me about his health. So, but it started as a question, are you still seeing Dr. So-and-so? And I said, I went to da-da-da-da. He said, I found somebody in Coimbatore, and he's a healer type, and he just basically mode of goodness program. Four things. Go to bed at 9, get up at 3. You got that one down, right? Go to bed at 9, get up at 3. And he's like, you know, when you fast, don't drink like gobs of water anytime, just like, you know, some little, he gave some amount of water. Don't take any medicine. He said he had some kind of fungus on his finger, and he was doing this and that and the other thing, and he just like stopped and just went away. He said, I lost 7 kgs in a month and a half. He's not like a heavy person. But, you know, this is just an example of its motive goodness. You know, the body heals itself was the message from the healer. The body heals itself. Just live the life in the mode of goodness. I'm not advocating you follow that. I'm just making a point. The mode of goodness fosters the symptoms of the mode of goodness. And Prabhupada's point is that persons who follow that standard, remember from yesterday, the mode of goodness, they don't go to Svargaloka. They go to the higher planets above Svargaloka. That kind of mode of goodness. They experience happiness. Then he goes to the mode of passion. It's miserable. There may be some sense in the mind, oh, now I have this house, now I have this money, but that's not what happiness is. It's miserable. Ardent endeavor, striving for something, and that the happiness is you get the thing, and that's happiness? Boy, if that's happiness, let me out of here. I mean, there must be something else. There is something else that's another kind of happiness. Not that one. And then, you know, the mode of ignorance. His indication from the, Krishna's indication from the previous verse, mode of ignorance, one goes down to the animal life. And one, you know, etc. You can just add, etc. Plants, fish, insects, a worm, and, you know, and birds, and animal life. You know, down, animal, etc. And animal life is miserable. Prabhupada was astonished. He reported this from time to time, that he would say to college students in America, if you live such a life, you'll become an animal. You'll live an animal life. And they would reply, Prabhupada said, what is the harm? I think being a dog might be very nice. What is the harm? Just see. Although he's saying here nicely, no, the animal doesn't understand that he's suffering. The other is also, one who is in a suffering condition thinks that suffering is okay. Or the living like an animal is okay and becoming an animal is okay. This is the mode of ignorance. And the mode of ignorance breeds more ignorance. And part of this ignorance, a big chunk of the purport, is animal killing. It's violence, and violence breeds violence. There's a reaction for that. Why is there so much war? Well, one reason we can certainly say is so much animal killing. We can say for sure, not like without any uncertainty. So much violence in the world is a product of the violence to the world around us and to Mother Nature and the inhabitants of Earth besides the human form of life. And as I was reading this purport, I was thinking of the trial in Russia. When, you know, this is translated in Chinese, and the Chinese government wants to see, are these people dangerous? And the Russian government wants to see, are these people dangerous? So they, you know, they're looking for, is it a threat to the government? But it's, you know, it's not. It's advising the government. Good government is where you lead the people not to become animals, where you lead the people to an elevated state. And he's very, according to the teaching of Bhagavad Gita, what that mode of nature is that's elevated. And when to understand it's distinct, how is it distinct from passion and ignorance, the other modes of nature? Although the passion and ignorance are very prevalent, why is it not advisable? The verse, just go over that quickly. Karmana Sukratas Yahu Satvikam Nirmalam Palam. Nirmalam is the pure. The actions and the mode of goodness are pure. Result of pious action is pure, and therefore is said to be in the mode of goodness. Misery, dukkham, palam dukkham, and then agyanam tamasa, palam, nonsense, or ignorance, or foolishness. The mode of ignorance results in foolishness. It's diametrically opposite real self-interest and the interest of others. So a person in the mode of goodness wishes to elevate themselves, and they wish to do that which is good for others. But one cannot do that. One cannot do that if covered by passion and ignorance. Even the thought of something that's good for myself and good for others is misdirected. So now we've heard that the destination of the souls in these different positions of the modes of nature. We're hearing here about the results of their work, what happens. And the symptoms of each of the modes of nature. Krishna has, there's a verse where he says, I'm going to describe these things, and now he's describing these things. It's quite detailed. And how do we... Knowledge... I'm going to put it as a question. How does reading this help us? Answer. Knowledge can lead to detachment. Rather than looking around and whining and complaining about, oh, look at this, and look at that, and look at the other thing, yuck. It's yuck, but you know, detachment is, you don't have to identify with it, you can just see it as it is. It's a display of Krishna's energy under the influence of these various modes that are operating, because the living entities are inclined this way or inclined that way. Their association is like this and like that. Sangat sanjayate kama. Because of association, they're like this or like that. So we can blame people that they're like this or like that, but we can then trace it back and say they're like this and like that because of this or that association. And that's just the state of affairs. So now what to do? Provide another kind of association. Seek it ourselves and provide it for others. That's doing good for others. That's what a saintly person's life is dedicated to do. One who has knowledge, A and B, can be detached from that influence, not affected, or at least less affected, but in a higher sense, not affected, especially if one is B, making an effort to provide the alternative. But if one is guided as to what the alternative is, then they can know to be like, you know, the mode of goodness as opposed to the other. And how to sustain it is by taking shelter of Krishna. Stay in the association of those who are inclined to cultivate the quality of goodness in their life, from whatever their position. There's all diversity amongst the devotees, but that attraction for the quality of goodness, and as is being presented here, Brahminical culture, the emblem of goodness and the emblem of knowledge, and seeking guidance and advice and training and, you know, and so forth from those that are qualified, not everyone is going to be a Brahmana in society. But if we take guidance and advice and training from those who are the Brahmanas, those who are the givers, the emblem of education, as he says in the purport, then our lives become uplifted. That's how society works when it's going on properly. So we should cultivate like that. And then, again, inside, if framing our lives in these with these qualities of goodness as much as is our capacity to do so, and being clean is not so difficult, being regulated is not so difficult, unless you have a little child. And do things that are of the quality of goodness, as far as you can, and make nice sadhana right at the center of your life. Early in the morning, nice strong sadhana. And the light becomes brighter, the darkness dissipates. It works like that. And fulfilling the commitments that make more goodness and more transcendence follow naturally. I started late, so it's already 22 after, so I'm going to see if you'd all like to ask some questions or have some discussion. Yes. Which instruction? Thou shalt not kill. You want to hear something about that?
I want to know in what context this is mentioned. I mean, just to understand, does it mean thou shalt not kill
animals? It's a commandment. The context is Moses was a leader of his people. He told them, I'm going to go get some instruction from God. Please, you know, don't deviate. I'll come back. And he went. And he got the Ten Commandments and he came back. So God made Ten Commandments. And one of them is this one. Thou shalt not kill. So Prabhupada's comment is, just see the people who he was addressing. This is, you know, like you might tell a child, don't do something. Don't hit your brother. Or something. Don't eat dirt. Don't kill, because it was going on, and other commandments that are pillars of, you know, going away from ignorance and passion towards goodness. That's what they are. They're moralities. So that's the context. Try it again.
How do we understand that it also means don't kill animals? I mean, did he mean only humans?
How did they get that one?
Yes.
Oh, here's how they got that one. It happened, it was just like a shell game. Yeah, I'll just give a personal narrative. When I was growing up as a small boy, my Bible read, thou shalt not kill. And then I went to college and I found out it changed. Thou shalt not murder. Wait a minute, what happened? What happened was the influx of people, because the tourist visa situation opened up. Following World War II, it was closed. Then it opened. That's how Prabhupada came in, on a tourist visa. And then with tourist visas, other kinds of visas, and more population in America with Eastern ideology, where vegetarianism or not taking the life of animals was popular. So they just changed it. We don't want to violate the sensibilities of these people that are wish to be vegetarian, so we'll change it to thou shalt not kill a human being. Murder, as opposed to take the life of another. Kill. That's how it happened. which needs one to wonder, what did the original Bible say? What did the original Ten Commandments say? What did Christ really say? And then you look into history and all kinds of editing, purpose-driven editing. You've heard some of these stories probably, right? King Constantine, he didn't like the idea of reincarnation. He thought, if people think that they don't have to become perfect in this life, they'll become complacent. Like if you ask a student, here's an option, all the students in this class, you can take your exam at such and such time, or you can take it later, whatever, which would you prefer? I'll take it later. So he didn't like reincarnation. I can do it later. So he got all the bishops together and got them in a room and said, don't come out until you expunge all these references to reincarnation. Just get rid of them. I don't like it. And so they did it. Because they were like, you know, the church was helping the king, the king was helping the church. And besides, they didn't want to lose their lives. So they just agreed with King Constantine. Etc. Okay, listen. If any devotee, before coming to Krishna consciousness, has killed an ant or a cockroach, or involved in any such activities, how can he or she purify themselves from such sinful activities? Is it by chanting and hearing or some other service? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. So if you've ever killed an ant or a cockroach or some such thing, you're now relieved, but don't do it again. And then chant, saying, it's okay because I chanted. And the process of devotional service in general, same. Krishna gave a promise that he is going to protect cows and brahmanas. They are very dear, but now exactly the opposite is happening. How to understand Krishna's protection? Well, Krishna doesn't promise that people will, their free will option of killing a cow is not an option. I've taken it away from them. Krishna hasn't made such a promise. His Konteya Prajijanihi Name Bhakta Pranashati, that's his promise. My devotee is never vanquished. But that doesn't mean the devotee will never die. The devotee will never have an accident. The devotee will never have a pain or something. The devotee will never have someone say something harsh to them ever. It just won't happen. I give my promise. That's not Krishna's promise. His devotee will never be vanquished. Opposition may be there. And certainly, through the agency of his representative, pure devotee, Srila Prabhupada, many persons all over the world have become vegetarian, and through his followers, many have become, but not just vegetarian, followers of Krishna. So, it's not Krishna's failure to keep his promise. The living entity has free will. The laws of nature are such that for those who don't heed the law, they're punished. Infallible law. Is it that the modes of nature decide our action, or our action decides the modes of nature? Please help. They feed one another. So there are these two principles. We discussed it a little bit yesterday. Here we go again. There's a verse in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna describes Chaturvarnamaya Shrishtam Guna Karma Vibhagasha, four divisions of society are established by me, Varnas, and they have two elements, Guna and Karma. So one induces the other and vice versa. They're without getting into all the technicalities, it's something like, you know what a Venn diagram is? You know what a Venn diagram is? Here's some education for you. Here's a circle, and where the two circles overlap a little, that's a Venn diagram. There's some qualities over here of this, there's some qualities over here of this, and there's some part that they share. So, in these verses that we're reading, there's a destination for one who's in the mode of goodness. They go to these places. Mode of passion, they go to those places. And in those places, the modes of nature are prevalent. And there's a certain type of activity. That's today's verse. The results are this. The results are that. So they're connected, but they're not identical principles. Action, reaction, the modes of nature. They share some similarities. I can't read the handwriting. Somebody can help me. After starting bhakti, maybe it's yoga, something fall down to animal consciousness, next life, he started with his life. I can't read it. Just see if you can decipher it. If an aspiring and struggling devotee at some point in his or her life has to perform an act in the mode of passion, how is he, she to maintain the sanctity or goodness in one's heart while performing one's duty? Well, let's take Lord Brahma. The act of creating a universe is an act of passion. The act of creation is an act of passion. So he had to create a universe. That's a lot of passion. But his sanctity was protected because he did that act for one purpose, for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. He was invested with Srishti Shakti, the creative potency, that this passion to create was invested in him by the Supreme Lord because he was such a qualified person and he needed a qualified person to be the creator. So, when actions in the modes of nature are to be performed as opposed to the ones that are not to be performed, one must be in the consciousness of dedicating that activity for the service of the Supreme Lord. That's the protection of... Someone that wants to read about this further, very comprehensive description, the last five verses of Brahma Samhita. Comprehensive description. Exactly that's Brahma's question. Exactly that topic is over five verses discussed. There's some other elements that are within that section. Krishna says it's achieved by a gradual cultivation while observing three things: theistic conduct, reference to scripture, and something else. Can't remember just now. Okay. There is a strong desire to cultivate motive goodness in my habits, dealings, etc. But the force of passion and ignorance jumps in and pulls us from our trying to practice, to cultivate motive goodness. I fail repeatedly. What to do? Keep trying. Abhyasa. That's, you know, the practice part must be there, the taking shelter part must be there, the hearing part must be there, the praying part must be there, and continue to practice. The unsteadiness of bhakti precedes steadiness in bhakti. So strive for steadiness. Strive for steadiness through the medium of very carefully performed practices. Vajana Kriya results in, Anartha Vritti results in steadiness. Vajana Kriya. Do your devotional practices very carefully in a proper mood of shelter taking, sense of connection and openness and being receptive to those who are guiding you in your life, in your cultivation of the quality of goodness. Make sure the signal is very strong, good strong signal, connection with those persons, the message and the persons themselves, both. And continue to practice that. Result of motive goodness is described as pure. Isn't purity the quality beyond the three modes, nirguna? Well, certainly. The translation is pure. And the word is nirmalam. And mala refers to the lower modes of nature. They're diminished. Prabhupada is translated as purified. So it's not exactly nirguna, it's nirmalam. It's the mode of goodness, where the modes of passion and ignorance are less. Have you deciphered it?
You think I can read it now? One falls down from bhakti yoga due to reaction, he takes the path of an animal.
Okay. If one, this is your handwriting.
No,
he rewrote it. Okay. If one falls down from bhakti yoga due to reaction, he takes the birth of an animal. Well, it's not exactly fall down from bhakti yoga. If one's life becomes immersed in ignorance, not exactly one falls down from bhakti yoga. So the preamble of the question is questionable. After the animal life, whether he will go to Goloka Dham or will he again take a birth in human life? Well, if you're Bharat Maharaj, you go back to Godhead, and if the rest of us, you're lucky to get a human form of life. Really lucky. Yes. Here comes the microphone, and it's on.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Krishna in his all-pervasive form.
Which one?
Brahman.
Brahman. That's not a form. Feature.
Okay.
Okay.
So he doesn't have a form in his all.
Brahman is formless. It's an aspect of the Supreme, so we can say in his all pervasive feature or his all pervasive aspect, but not his all pervasive form. Just correcting the language of your question. Go ahead.
So that means he has form only in the hearts of the living entities.
And?
As Paramatma.
And? Bhagavan. Ah.
He has form in the hearts of the living
entity. Yes.
As Bhagavan and also as Paramatma.
Yes. And Brahman is formless. Okay?
So, but I've read that the pure devotees see Krishna everywhere.
A pure devotee does what?
Sees Krishna everywhere.
Sees Krishna everywhere.
Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena.
You read that somewhere, huh?
I read it in Sri Brahma Samhita.
Sure. And so, what's your question?
So, it is said there that he is everywhere. A pure devotee sees like that. So, would you explain how he sees, how
yes,
a pure devotee
out of,
sees?
Out of love. Okay. That's how.
I understood that he may be seeing as Krishna as a sanctioner, because if we move our hand like this, it means that Krishna is sanctioning. And if somebody is moving their hand, it means Krishna is sanctioning. So, I was like...
What's the problem? You're making a face like it's a problem. What's the problem?
No. So, does a pure devotee see that Krishna is sanctioning everything?
More than that.
More than that. What is that, Maharaj?
They see the form of Krishna.
I read that he reveals according to the proportion of the bhakti of the devotee.
That's right. You're doing a college program. This piece fits with that piece. Wait a minute, there's this one that contradicts that one. Please excuse me, but I call that a college question.
I was struggling to ask
that's
the question.
That's okay. I'm teasing you, but don't take it like the wrong way. Someone take the microphone away from him. Thank you. Subject matters, we're to ponder them. Yes, but they're not going to be understood. They will not be understood simply by how does this fit together with that. We're to ponder them. It's not wrong the approach that you're taking. But please understand that approach in itself is not going to give you the understanding that you're looking for. You'll realize the shortcoming of the very process. So it's like, here's the simple one. Searching for God with a torch. Or excuse me, searching for the sun with a torch. With a light, a flashlight, we say in America, flashlight. That's not how the sun is understood or found. The sun is self-luminous. So bask in the illumination of these messages, and how it all fits together becomes self-evident, or it becomes illuminated like that. So now just take some of those examples. Krishna is sanctioning. And then another person, Krishna is sanctioning. He's in the heart of Maya Jakshina Prakrite Suyate Sacharacharam. He's in the heart of every living entity sanctioning whatever happens. Upadrashta Anumantacha. 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. He's the overseer and the permitter. He sanctions. Situated in the heart of every living entity. And he is all pervasive also. Brahman is all pervasive in a formless way. He is all pervasive as Paramatma within every atom and within the heart with every living being. That's another feature by which Krishna is all pervasive. And here's another feature by which Krishna is all pervasive, by his energy. What is there? I'll give you the answer first. The answer is, there isn't. The question is, what exists? What is there that exists apart from Krishna's energy in Krishna? There's not a third thing. There's no void in creation, Prabhupada would say. Because void means the absence of Krishna or Krishna's energy, and there isn't such a thing. There's no void in the creation of God. So Krishna is all-pervasive through His energy. Krishna is all-pervasive through His Paramatma feature. Krishna is all-pervasive through His Brahman feature. But the devotee, by love, sees Shama Sundara playing on his flute. Premanjana Churita Bhakti Valochinena Santaksa Daivhrudayoshi Valokayanti Yam Shama Sundaram Achintya. What does achintya mean? Inconceivable. So don't try to conceive of the inconceivable. That's my message to you. Okay? Hear the message, ponder it, but don't try to conceive of it with the mind, because you'll just spin. The mind will spin and you'll go, whoa. It's not how it's to be understood. We've gone way past our time. We'll end. Thank you very much. Prabhupada ki jai.